This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, August 3rd. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the CDC eviction moratorium has expired. We'll speak with a reporter who has put together a guide of resources for those facing eviction. One neighborhood in Denver has created its own hyper-local eviction moratorium. We'll hear about that, currently in effect in the East Colfax neighborhood. How botanical sexism affects your allergies? That story and other headlines in the current edition of This Week in Water. And we'll play our weekly comment line, comments from listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU. Today on How on Earth, the KGNU Science Show examines psychedelic mushrooms and depression. At 9 a.m., it's the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative, 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. But first, it's time for local and regional headlines with Stacey Johnson.
Colorado Governor Jared Polis has announced he will soon issue a state disaster declaration for the mudslides that have shut down Interstate 70 through Glenwood Canyon. The Glenwood Canyon stretch of I-70 remains closed as crews attempt to address debris and damage done to the interstate as a result of recent mudslides. There is no estimate when it will reopen. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment announced yesterday it will make multiple changes to the state's COVID-19 vaccine data dashboard, aiming to have additional detail on vaccination rates. According to the latest statewide modeling report, vaccinations can still prevent a fall season uptick of COVID-19 if Coloradans get at least one shot before Labor Day. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, CDPHE, and the Colorado School of Public Health released an updated statewide modeling report yesterday showing the importance of vaccines given in Colorado by Labor Day weekend. As schools start up again this month, the models show that Colorado could still experience thousands more cases of severe but avoidable COVID-19 infections over the upcoming fall months. The CDPHE says that vaccination is the key to preventing these cases, especially in the teenage range. By comparing vaccination scenarios, the modeling shows that increasing vaccination rates by Labor Day to 80% among adults with at least one shot will prevent substantial COVID-19 hospitalizations this fall. The model also looks at a 70% target for Colorado teen vaccinations as schools prepare to reopen, posing a risk for increasing infections in this age group. To reach 80% of Colorado adults with at least one shot, 456,000 first doses will need to be administered in August. And to reach 70% of Colorado teens with at least one shot, 90,000 first doses will need to be administered to teens this month. Vaccinations were declining daily over the summer in all age groups, leading to an uptick in COVID-19 cases in the state last week. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
In a follow-up to a story you heard yesterday on the Morning Magazine, Denver City Council voted last evening approving the landmark designation of La Alma Lincoln Park neighborhood as a historic cultural district, only the second of its kind behind Denver's Five Points neighborhood. The neighborhood was the heart of Denver's Chicano movement in the 1960s and 70s. Immigrant rights activists will meet with representatives of Colorado's congressional delegation today in Denver. Leaders from Colorado's People's Alliance, American Friends Service Committee, Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, and Together Colorado will participate in a so-called Fast for Freedom listening session with staff from the offices of Senator Michael Bennett and Congressman Joe Neguse. Activists and leaders from the organizations have been fasting since June, urging Congress to create a pathway for citizenship for the estimated 11 million undocumented individuals currently living in the United States. The City of Boulder has announced that the West Age Well Center, located at 909 Arapahoe Avenue, will reopen for general programming beginning on August 16th. In-person operations will be Monday through Friday, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., the center offers services to adults 60 and over and their caregivers. Programs include lifelong learning, case management, hearing and vision screening, Parkinson's music therapy, medical foot care, and therapeutic massage. The city will continue to offer some programs online to help increase access and participation. According to the city's Older Adult Services, the East Age Well Center, located at the East Boulder Community Center, will remain closed with potential plans to reopen in the future. Colorado's two independent redistricting commissions will again hold public hearings this week as an opportunity for residents to comment on the preliminary maps of the state's 8 congressional districts, as well as the 65 state House and 35 Senate districts. The Congressional Independent Redistricting Commission will hold its own hearing today, starting at noon at the Powell Middle School in Littleton. Tonight at 7 p.m., both commissions will hold a joint hearing at Centennial's Coble Library. Wednesday's joint hearing will be 7 p.m. at the Golden High School Auditorium. For the remainder of the week, hearings will be held in Colorado Springs, Trinidad, Alamosa, and in Durango. More information about the hearings and the preliminary maps is available online at redistricting.colorado.gov. Along with the public hearing activity, Colorado's Congressional Redistricting Commission voted yesterday to extend its deadline to approve and submit a final map to the Colorado Supreme Court. According to the Colorado Sun, the extension aims to avoid cutting back on public hearings and to give staff time to crunch final population data that is expected to be received later in the month. The Congressional Commission now plans to adopt a final map by September 28th, and then staff will have 3 days to submit final materials to the Colorado Supreme Court by October 1st. And weather today, it is expected to be mostly cloudy with a high near 82. There is a chance of showers and thunderstorms, likely increasing after 4 p.m. Right now, outside our Boulder studios, it is 70 degrees. For KGNU, this is Stacy Johnson.
The CDC's federal moratorium on evictions expired over the weekend, thereby removing a legal framework that has protected thousands of Colorado families behind on rent from the risk of eviction. I'm joined by Colorado Newsline reporter Mo Clark, who authored a type of guidebook of resources for those facing eviction. Welcome, Mo.
Thanks for having me.
You originally published your eviction guide back in April. How many times have you had to change it?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say maybe 6 times we've done kind of a complete update. Obviously, the protections have kind of been shifting throughout the months, but kind of a complete update, maybe 6 times.
And of course, the lifting of the eviction moratorium is the most recent update to it. It's obviously a big rule changer. What do people most at risk of eviction now need to know?
So I think one of the most important things that folks should know is if you have applied for emergency rental assistance through the state's program or through a city or county program that is a part of the state's program, folks have 30 days before a landlord can file an eviction. Before it was 10 days. So you have 30 days to get caught up on your rent before the landlord can file an eviction. So it's definitely not the strongest of protections. It just buys folks a little bit more time if they were solely being protected by this federal eviction moratorium.
And just to give listeners an idea of the scale, how many people in Colorado are currently facing the risk of eviction?
Reporters kind of across the state have been trying to figure out an accurate number for this. And it's been pretty challenging to come up with an accurate number just with all the changing protections and executive orders and things like that. But the Census Bureau puts out a household pulse survey every couple weeks where they survey renters to see if they've missed their rental payments or how likely they are to miss their rental payments. And the most recent survey shows that of the people that are behind on their rent, 40.5% of adults are at risk of eviction. And so that comes out to around 79,000 Colorado adults. And so that number also doesn't include children that might live in the home. But like I said, modeling for these things has been really challenging throughout the pandemic. And yeah, it seems like no one really has a good pulse on that number. I think the Census Bureau probably is the closest. So,
and narrowing that down to our signal area, Denver, of course, has accounted for the largest number of evictions during the pandemic. How many people are at risk now, according to the most recent information that you have? Or how many people are at least have the threat of an eviction filing hanging over their heads?
From the data I've collected from the Colorado Judicial Branch and also Denver's county courts, there's been 12,683 evictions that have been filed across the state since January 1. Denver accounts for 25% of those filings, so definitely the highest county when it comes to eviction filings. They've had 2,499 cases as of July 22nd. And of course, this is all data collected before the moratorium expired this weekend. And housing advocates and eviction attorneys are expecting a sizable spike in eviction filings this week since the federal eviction moratorium expired this weekend. So that kind of gives a snapshot, but I think the actual picture is probably a lot more filings than the data I just explained.
As primarily a digital news site, it's easy to get an idea of how many people are consulting your work. How much traction has your eviction guide received?
It's received a lot. For a couple weeks there, it was definitely one of our most read stories, and some other publications have picked it up. Our stories are Creative Commons, so anyone can use the stories that we produce. So there were a handful of outlets that had published different iterations of the guide. We're also publishing it in Spanish now, and that's available on our website. But yeah, it is definitely a highly accessed guide, which definitely points to kind of the need for this information. Last week, I spoke to an eviction attorney, and he said just everything that he's hearing is just pure confusion from renters. There's been so many protections that have changed. There's been a lot of misinformation out there. Like, people just are confused and they need straightforward information on these are the protections in place. This is what could happen. This is what you do if you do get an eviction filing. And these are resources that can help you kind of navigate through this really, really scary and kind of destabilizing time for a lot of families.
Is there anything else that you would like to add that I didn't address with my questions?
One thing I would like to add is, if unfortunately an eviction is issued by a judge against a renter, a new law is now in place that passed this past legislative session that gives folks 10 days to vacate the property. Previously, that number was folks had 48 hours. So a little bit more time for folks to find their next spot or make arrangements with family members and things like that. So just want folks to know that law change. I think that those are kind of the most important ones.
Mo Clark, housing reporter with Colorado Newsline. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
One response to the lifting of the federal eviction moratorium has been to make the protections hyper-local. That's the case with nonprofit housing providers in Denver's East Colfax neighborhood. Kalina Wong is Housing Assistance Campaign Director of the East Colfax Community Collective.
We're very, very proud to announce that Rocky Mountain Communities, Hope Communities, together with direct support and collaboration with the East Colfax Neighborhood Association and the East Colfax Community Collective and the COVID-19 Eviction Defense Project. Together, we've collectively agreed to establish a local moratorium for residents that are actively seeking out emergency assistance. with the goal of protecting our neighbors, our family, and our friends from mass eviction and subsequent homelessness.
The hyperlocal moratorium was announced Friday in a virtual press conference. Bert Nadler is staff attorney with the COVID-19 Eviction Defense Project.
This agreement for a voluntary eviction moratorium is an historic moment for both the landlords and the tenants involved. Each has shown their commitment to the stability of the East Colfax community by working together to keep tenants housed while organizing tenants to take advantage of the available resources to help pay their rent. Such cooperation is a model for community and neighborhood stability and is so necessary.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Time now for This Week in Water from H2O Radio.
How botanical sexism affects your allergies. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
There was a bit of relief from the drought in the Southwest as parts of Arizona and California received monsoonal rains. It was the wettest July on record in Tucson, with over 7 inches falling.
And in Death Valley, nearly half an inch fell in a single hour, leading to flash flood warnings. However, the drought persists.
At Lake Powell on the Colorado River, the second largest reservoir in the country, the water fell to just 33% capacity, its lowest level since being filled more than 50 years ago.
In parts of California and the Pacific Northwest, extreme heat was expected to make new wildfires possible. Currently, more than 80 fires are burning in the West, with those in Oregon covering the most ground.
Near the California-Oregon border, wells are running dry and many homes have no water. The state of Oregon is shipping 350 emergency storage tanks to the area, obtained from as far away as Oklahoma.
In Northern California, almost a quarter of the wells in Mendocino are going dry. Water is being trucked in from other places, and there's a plan to bring it in by train from 40 miles away.
In Utah, Governor Spencer Cox is promoting the first ever statewide program that would pay residents to remove their grass. More than 70% of water in the state is used for outdoor landscaping, and the governor said it's past time to aggressively embrace water-saving strategies.
In 1933, Franklin Roosevelt established the Civilian Conservation Corps, which created jobs during the Great Depression. The program put almost 3 million men to work, planting billions of trees and building water lines, trails, and new parks.
Now, Democrats are pushing a Climate Conservation Corps to address impacts from global warming. It would invest in conserving public lands and waters, restore coastal areas, and expand regenerative agriculture.
While the details are still vague, President Biden's plan for the Corps would emphasize strengthening communities against wildfires and hurricanes. Workers would clear brush in fire-prone areas, restore wetlands to retain water, and remove invasive species.
A Corps could also build infrastructure for renewable energy and help the national parks with its $12 billion maintenance backlog.
Last week, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer vowed to ensure that a robust climate conservation corps is part of a final reconciliation package that would only need the support of Democrats to pass. If you suffer from seasonal allergies, you might feel with each passing year that they're getting worse. And according to a recent study, pollen concentrations have increased in North America, and the season is over 20 days longer than it was in 1990.
One big reason is climate change. Warmer temperatures, more CO2 in the atmosphere, and even air pollution are aggravating allergies. CO2 can make plants bloom more, creating additional pollen. And when pollution particulates attach to pollen grains, it can make them explode into tiny pieces that are more easily absorbed into your respiratory tract.
But those aren't the only reasons. City planners may also be to blame for something called botanical sexism, planting more male trees than female ones. The logic was that male trees don't drop messy seed pods or fruit, but instead release pollen, which is less burdensome to maintain.
Tom Ogren, a horticulturalist and pollen allergy expert, told Texas News Today that the preference for planting male trees might not have been worth it after all. He said that if you took all the seeds that fell from female trees and weighed them against the extra climate-induced pollen from male trees, it would probably be a wash.
Moving forward, experts recommend planting a variety of trees, both male and female, focusing on using native species and advocating for cleaner air. And finally, with all the news about floods, extreme storms, drought, and wildfires, it can feel overwhelming to think of ways to battle climate change. While organized protests might grab headlines, there's a subtle mode of activism that's growing in popularity.
Guerrilla gardening is the act of cultivating plants in public places without permission, like vacant lots or neglected areas next to sidewalks which are full of weeds or worse, just bare soil.
Jenny Van Gestel with Guerrilla Gardeners Netherlands told Euronews reclaiming these places can have far-reaching impacts from improving biodiversity to lowering temperatures in hot urban areas.
These rehabilitated green spaces can manage water better, from catching runoff during extreme storms to maintaining soil health during droughts.
Ellen Miles, founder of Dream Green, says living in greener neighborhoods improves mental health, increases lifespans, and builds community.
Gardening on public land is potentially illegal, so if there's an abandoned lot or bare median in your neighborhood beckoning you to plant, you might want to contact local officials before you dig. That said, cities which have stretched budgets and small staffs are often more than happy to have the help.
That's it for this week in Water. We'll see you next time.
And now we check in with KGNU's Comment Line when we hear what's on the minds of listeners.
Hi, this is Dan C. Winters in Boulder. And lately I have noticed that there has been a shift from calling people homeless to calling people unhoused, as being unhoused. This shift has been evident in much of the media, including, I might say, KGNU and Democracy Now! I think I understand in part why this has occurred, Unhoused is a somewhat gentler, kinder sounding term than being homeless. But being homeless goes beyond not having a house. A house is an inanimate object, while a home conveys warmth, compassion, fellowship, a gathering space. No, I'm afraid that unhoused is not gentler. It escapes the loss, the real loss that comes from being forced into the street. Let's go back to calling the homeless homeless and work on changing that. Thank you.
A reminder that comments longer than 1.5 minutes are edited for brevity. This space is reserved for listeners to comment on what they heard on KGNU and is not intended as a space for making calls to action or announcing events on the airwaves. If you'd like to share a comment with KGNU about what you've heard on the airwaves, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Before we go, a preview of what's coming up on tonight's edition of Hemispheres. Elena Claver's guest will be Indigenous activist Chase Iron Eyes.
We are dealing with a very confrontational, violent settler mentality. The Indian wars have never ended. And right now, everybody who might listen to this has a chance to be on the right side of history. That's what we're asking, is for people to build bridges with us. For people to recognize that their sovereignty, their natural birthrights to clean water and healthy ecosystems, and a sacred, metaphysical, unitive experience on this planet as a human species is connected to their willingness to honor the treaties and to inform themselves about the original civilizations in this hemisphere, which are the indigenous nations. So we're trying to build those bridges based on those premises of respect and honor and true truth sharing and reconciliation. That's what our work is about.
That's coming up tonight on Hemispheres at 6 p.m. And that's all we have for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Volunteer Headlines producer Stacey Johnson, volunteer reporter Steve Miller, and Dave Ashton for providing audio on the East Colfax eviction moratorium. Again, if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, our comment line is 303-447-9911.